In regards to all the work you've been doing, and I mean, really changed decompression. And I'm just learning, and I see we've defined certain compartments that were following through the body, and as far as fast and slow releases. And what has been done with regards to moving beyond compartments and tissues to the point of molecular changes from pressure? I'm wondering, it's not really a macro position we're at now, but clearly chemicals change under pressure as well. And I'm wondering if you've got that far, if you started looking into whether the isomers change polarities and all that kind of stuff, and how that affects. Thanks.
Well, what... yeah, it's true. I mean, if you pressurize gases and chemicals, you're going to get polymers and, you know, chemicals that don't exist in nature other than under pressure. So that would certainly explain things like high pressure nervous syndrome.
Yeah, you know.
The most important one of those changes that you guys need to know about is the effect of nitrogen under pressure. Obviously, you know about narcosis. But and this relates back to the tissue compartment thing. What happens with nitrogen is it's not really it's not an inert substance to start with, really, and it has all kinds of effects on the cells and on how the body reacts and behaves. So one of the first, you know, one of the obvious thing is bubbles. Nitrogen bubbles will cause an immune reaction. Your body will try to fight that. It'll try to treat bubbles like invaders, and your body acts just as if you've got a virus or the flu. The other thing that it tries to do is if a bubble blocks a vessel, the body will attempt to bypass that area, shunt it off, close it down, and bypass it with blood. So if you have an injury, just pick a spot, like in the muscle, for example, that the body senses, it'll shut it down and go around it. So the nitrogen will still accumulate, but it won't come out, you know, because it's in solution. But the transport mechanism of the capillaries is not in effect to get rid of it, although it'll work its way into the tissues. So you get a lot of injuries due to that.
The scar tissue
you've heard of people who, like, have been diving forever, and now they can't even dive to 30 feet without getting bent.
Yeah.
So what that is if you take a vessel, take a blood vessel, and you block it, what the body immediately does is this. Creates little teeny capillaries. It's just called angiogenesis. The same thing from, like, if you work out all the time, you create more and more and more capillaries because you're depriving the tissue of oxygen and nutrients. So the body's reaction is to create a new blood vessel, which it can do instantly. And you know, so what happens is this site then will look like this. Blood's coming in, blood going out of the site, but it's doing so through these little capillaries. It's like if you had a big thick wire and then you had little tiny wires bypassing, when you try to run a lot of current through, it's just going to eat the little wires. Not going to happen. So what happens now, these are much smaller. So you do it again and create a bubble, it's going to catch immediately in these. Now you're going to get injured again. Now it's going to happen again. And that's what happens with these. That's what you see with these guys that can't dive anymore. They've got injured themselves so many times. And almost universally, it comes back to nitrogen. Those guys you'll find are all air divers. And they did either long exposures on air at shallow to intermediate depths, or they did deeper diving on air. What happens with nitrogen under pressure is that if you look at a red blood cell, it's like a disc, a biconcave disc. It's like that. When it goes through a capillary, it folds to go through a small capillary. In people from, you know, like Sicily and North Africa, they get sickle cell anemia type diseases. What that is where the cell becomes rigid.
Yeah.
It'll crank over and hold a rigid shape, and then it catches.
Locks.
capillaries. And those people feel pain in the joints. They feel, you know, overall, you know, muscle pain. They feel like they have the flu. And when you pressurize, when you put enough partial pressure of nitrogen on the blood cells, it causes a surface tension of the nitrogen against the cell, which makes the cell rigid. So the cell will rip. It'll rip through capillaries or block them. And a couple things happen. One thing is that your body reacts to it like an invader. It treats it just like a virus. It surrounds it with white cells. If the area gets blocked, it'll go into the angiogenesis routine. It'll trigger the stretch receptors in your blood vessels. It'll trigger the release of nitric oxide, which is causes the blood vessels to dilate to try to, you know, let these things pass through. It's like, you know, Viagra does that. It's like taking Viagra. But what happens is, obviously, you know, if you open blood vessels up in order to accommodate in a problem, and then they close back up again, you're not going to be able to get rid of, you know, you're going to have blockage again. And then, you know, you get this effect. And, you know, anybody who's ever done any air diving, whether it be 100-foot air diving or 200-foot air diving, has experienced the feeling like you have the flu after the dive. Do you ever guys ever feel like that? Sure. Do you ever have that, like, achy or, like, just not right feeling? Tired? That's what that is. Yeah, that's what that is, because it's the it's your body's fighting off the damage. Mm-hmm. So the problem is, you know, so the fact is, as you're saying, you have all these chemical reactions, this being the most notable. The other ones are less well understood. Stick with this for a second, but this is the biggie you have to avoid. And apparently, nitrogen in the presence of helium does not display the effect as easily as just if you have no helium. By experimentation, we've kind of come up with the helium doesn't really start to do much good until you're about 30% helium. As far as this effect and other effects, you know, even the narcosis, you know, you can't really, and the ease of breathing and these things that make helium a nice gas, they don't really kick in until about 30% at any depth. But then, you know, as Thomas explained to you, where you know, how you try to get the helium as high as possible from. So you have that. Another reaction that you're going to get in the body is if carbon dioxide builds up. Okay, that's going to change the pH of the blood, and that's going to change the blood's ability to transport oxygen via the hemoglobin bonds. Mm-hmm. So it'll transport oxygen in solution from the high pressure. In other words, you've got so much partial pressure of oxygen that's being forced into the fluid and into the tissues. So you're still functioning, but your ability to transport it via the normal mechanism has been reduced or eliminated. And what happens in situations like that, you know, you've heard of blackout, where people black out from carbon monoxide or CO2 coming up. What happens is, it's like a free diver will black out coming up. Somebody who's been breathing gas that has carbon monoxide in it will black out coming up. That's because the carbon monoxide occupies the hemoglobin bonds. And in the case of carbon dioxide, it disrupts the hemoglobin bonds. So as you come up to a shallower depth and less partial pressure of oxygen, you fall below, let's say you get more normoxic, you can no longer transport, and there's not enough dissolved in the tissues and in the fluids to keep you going, and you black out. Same thing with a free diver, dives down, increases the partial pressure of the oxygen enough to operate, but the CO2 is building, you know, because the act of energy, oxygen through the cells creates carbon dioxide. So he's building carbon dioxide as he comes back up. His partial pressure of oxygen drops way down, and his ability to transport is lost.
So it's not so much that there's no more oxygen left; it's just that you can't transport it.
Well, you can transport it, and due to the presence of the relatively high presence of carbon dioxide, and the fact that you have less presence. So maybe you had enough to operate at 60 feet. Well, when you get up to the surface, then it's a fourth of that, third of that. So
yeah.
So you're
part of it.
You've been able to deplete it. You've been able to operate because of the higher partial pressure, even though
you don't notice that it's too little.
Yeah, if you were sitting here on the surface, you wouldn't be able to hold your breath that long.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the exertion is creating a massive amount of CO2. CO2 and oxygen cause other problems where high partial pressures of oxygen tend to trap CO2 in tissues. In other words, the CO2 has trouble getting out through the blood and out through the lungs under high partial pressures of oxygen. And what you'll notice, and you guys probably felt this, you'll be decompressing 70 feet or something like that, and you kick a little bit and you feel like, you know, crampish, you know, it feels like easily tired, you know. That's the effect. Now, if you add nitrogen to that, it makes it twice as bad. So if you have nitrogen and high partial pressure of nitrogen and oxygen, you're blocking CO2 even further. So when you exert, you feel immediately winded because of the CO2 in the tissues. That feels different than CO2 in the bloodstream. CO2 in the tissues just feels terrible. And feels like pain.
You actually got physical cramps.
Almost like cramps, but not the same. It's like you'll kick and your legs will be, you know, real. I mean, just a couple of strokes and...
I've had a couple of dives where I've got terribly cramped up at 10 feet, more than a couple. I've had lots of dives where I just, for no reason, the scent was right, everything was cool, the profile was right, but all of a sudden my calf just got nailed.
Yeah, it's that, and the other thing, going back to what you were saying, is that it apparently does something to the potassium. And the potassium is strictly an ionic, you know, it's a positive negative, you know, balance thing, electrical balance thing. And if it does something to that, then it gives you the cramps.
Well, if you change the pH, you're going to move the ions. You build them up on one side or the other.
Yeah, that's why you can feel all that stuff. There's a combination of those things. I generally like, you know, if I try to take some potassium before I dive, you know, if I'm diving a long dive. I try to take it before I have to carry the gear, you know.
But that's also one of the reasons we use scooters for deeper dives.
You can't really swim deep because of the pressure on the joints. You know, it's massive pressure on the joints. The act of compression itself, rapid compression especially, is extremely damaging because the body does not instantaneously adjust. It should, you know, theoretically, it's water. Yeah. It should instantaneously. It should, but it doesn't. You have so many like sinus areas, you have areas around the lungs and other areas in the joints that are not, you know, totally fluid and aren't full. And as you drop down, these areas get squeezed until they can equalize, or if they're at all blocked, they'll tend to fill themselves with fluid. In the process, they can damage. I mean, you hear about blood, and a lot of people, when they first start diving, will get blood in their mask and bloody nose and stuff like that. That's what that is. The body, you haven't adequately equalized certain compartments, and the body just fills it with fluid or blood to compensate pretty quickly. That's where that comes from. But you can see how you can damage things like joints. You know, if you're compressing them too rapidly. Bones, you know, too rapid a compression on the bones, and obviously the speed of compression on the nervous system and on the sheaths around the nerves and the spine and the, you know, neck and all these areas are, you know, could potentially cause damage to commercial divers. They used to send them down quickly. When I say commercial in that sense, I mean like 200 foot stuff, you know, not like 1500 foot stuff, but they used to send them down pretty quickly. And they found that these guys were getting damaged from that. Commercial diving is also what found out about air damage. They would, some of these commercial and Navy doctors discovered that an MRI scan of a commercial diver who'd been diving air appeared to be exactly the same as an MRI scan of a multiple sclerosis patient.
Really?
The spine and the brain. In other words, there were so many lesions in the spine. The nerve tissue is the fastest tissue. Go into compartments now. It's the fastest tissue, but it's also sheathed in fat. You know, it's extremely well perfused. Is why it's fast.
Is it faster than blood?
Well, the blood is.
We can't really regard that as a tissue.
Well, the blood doesn't really. The cells don't accept nitrogen into them. They merely transport. Yeah, just they're because they're next to, you know, it's not
the saturation.
Yeah, they're not into, they're not, it's not getting into the tissues. In other words, as a tissue, it's there. But the thing about the blood is the blood, the system leaving the heart starts with a big artery, and that branches into smaller and smaller arteries until you get all the way down to the tiniest capillaries and turns a corner, and now you're into veins, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. So when you're off-gassing bubbles, you're off-gassing into the venous, not the arterial. The arterial's not putting out or accepting the gas. It's the venous side. So the bubbles tend to always be moving to a larger conduit. And until they hit the lungs, where they go back into small capillaries to cover, I mean, the lungs, if you could lay the surface of the capillary bed surface of the lungs out, it would be the size of a football field. So you have that a football field size area. There's a filter right here. And that is, and that's going to catch these bubbles. So you have a different mechanism. If you bubble in tissues and it can't escape, it can't get into the capillary to escape, that's going to be cause damage and pain. If you bubble in the bloodstream on the venous side, it will be captured by the capillaries. If you just did an explosive decompression and blew right to the surface, you'd have massive amounts of bubbles and it would overcome the filter system. It wouldn't necessarily bypass, it would choke it off. And it would cause the feeling of not being able to get your breath and coughing. And
the chokes
they call it. You can get the same, it's like self-generated asthma. Asthma does, it feels like the same, it feels the same as asthma. It would look the same. And weirdly enough, it's like oxygen exacerbates it. So if you try to like breathe oxygen with that kind of situation, it just makes it worse. But anyway, the compartment issue is merely an attempt to quantify decompression in a form of a model. And it's not really accurate because of the transport mechanisms are more important than the makeup of the tissue. And the way in which you decompress these tissues is important. If you take the slowest tissue, the worst tissue is fat, straight out fat, because it may only have as little as one capillary per cubic millimeter, whereas, you know, you'd have hundreds times that in nerve tissue. So the problem with fat is that gas can get into fat from anywhere, just from dissolved gas, but to get out, it's got to work, it's find that capillary. So fat gets bent real easily. That's what gives you skin bends. It's a subcutaneous fat that purple turns purple and everything. That's just because gas can't get out. Fat will decompress, obviously, but it will not. Fat, like bone and other slower tissues, the connective tissues, bone, and fat are going to be your slowest tissues. So when you start your decompression from a dive, you have to keep in mind that the lack of perfusion in fat and the nature of bone and connective tissue also not being well perfused other than the surface. Bone is only well perfused at the very surface where new bone is being created. Right on the top, like the inside of your shins. That's why they hurt when you get touched. The thing you have to do is you know you're not going to be able to bubble that gas out of those tissues. It's just not the nature of those tissues, and the perfusion isn't correct for that. So you need to give the gas a chance to come out in solution. So it's slow to get in there, and it'll reach its relative saturation in the same amount of time as the rest of your body. But the only way to really effectively get it out is to get it out in solution. Now, going back to skin bends, if you don't get it out in solution, it bubbles in, and you go up too fast from depth and form a bubble in the tissues, well, it's not going to bother you at that point. But now when you get way up here, it's going to start hurting. Or you won't notice it maybe if it's in the fat. And after the dive, it'll be purple and, you know, it'll be sore. And then it'll swell, you know, get all, and take on fluid and get all sloppy looking. That,
is there a direct relationship to hydration with getting rid of bubbles from fat tissue specifically?
Well, hydration, you know, you don't want to be dehydrated. Because, you know, that means you're merely at a disadvantage. You've got too much, you know, there's not enough, you know, fluid in the blood. There's not enough fluid for the kidneys to operate properly. You have other, you know, your osmotic balance is going to be different because you've got more, you know, other things in the blood besides fluid. And that would tend to say that it would be more difficult to transport. The problem is that with in looking at hydration as, or dehydration as an issue in decompression, that the other problems caused by the damage of dehydration are the body's going to react to and give you bends from the reaction to the dehydration, not because you can't transport the bubbles. So you have two things at play there. So you could say, yeah, it's true that a dehydrated diver would more easily get bent, or a hydrated diver would not as easily get bent. But it's not a transport really problem as much as it is a, you know, you're offsetting the rest of the balances and causing other problems. But anyway, we're talking about with, you know, the body, that and when the body starts reacting to these things and changing blood flows and shunting blood away and doing all those other things, you're going to get unquantifiable results as to what might happen. It's just like when, if you're diving and you get cold. Say your body temperature starts to drop. The first thing the body does is it shunts blood away from the extremities because it figures the extremities are losing the heat. So it stops sending blood there so that you don't give up more heat. Well, what's then happening is you're trapping gas in the extremities. So as you come up, you're not able to get rid of it, and those extremities will get bent. Numb fingers, you know, that kind of crap. Just one thing. Hey, lovey.